Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Aaron Reed is with us, and man, has he got some opinions on radio stations moving too close together when they've got HD signals to worry about. Pretty interesting. Plus, Chris Tobin joined us, and we're talking about smart speakers. It's all coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by the Calrec Type R console system. Type R is a brand new, modular, expandable IP-based radio system from Calrec Audio.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack. Delighted to be here with you today. I'm not in my usual studio in Nashville, you know, the Telos Alliance studio. Not there. Had to make an emergency trip out to Mississippi. I got to tell you something a little scary. The room I'm in right now, 5.5 days ago, a tornado went right overhead this building. And that's been confirmed by the National Weather Service and by the damage outside. And there's a tower behind me that 5.5 days ago, that tower was 60 feet tall. Now it's 35 feet tall. And it's been a bit of a challenge. And we just got internet back here like literally 3 hours ago. So, hey, challenges. Well, we just, you know, chew them up and eat them for breakfast. welcome into the show. Chris Tobin may be joining us. He's not here now. I'm Kirk Harnack. I do work for the Telos Alliance. So maybe sometimes you'll hear some biased information from me in that regard. Just put up with it. They make great stuff. And I know a lot about it. Our guest today is somebody that I've wanted to have on for a long time because he has an effervescent personality and an opinion on everything. And that's our friend Aaron Reed. Aaron, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech.
Oh, thank you, Kirk. It's a pleasure to be here. So, are we just going to do an hour on what grinds my gears, I believe was what was promised?
I had a nicer title. I had some things I like and some things I don't.
All right.
Well, yeah, that's what we'll do. Before we jump into what you like and what you don't, or what grinds your gears, give us the elevator speech on Aaron Reed. You know, when you meet somebody at the Association of Public Radio Engineers or the PREC in Vegas, what do you tell them if people haven't met you before?
I tell them that my job title might be chief engineer, but I prefer jack of all trades because I actually had that on my business cards for a while too, because I've had to do a little bit of everything at this point. I mean, at one point, as you know, I was a general manager for crying out loud. Nowadays I'm just back comfortably doing engineering. But it's engineering these days is A, it's as much about IT as it is anything else, but really it's about making things work for people. So, you got to be able to interact with a lot of different types of people on a daily basis. So it's a little bit of everything. And that psych degree I got low those many years ago does come in more and more handy every day. And I'm in Rhode Island now. I've worked a little bit here and there. I used to work in Boston. I did a stint up in upstate New York in the Finger Lakes and a little bit in Southern California, but now I'm here in Providence and I love it.
Well, if people follow you on Facebook or meet you, they know, look, you can call Aaron Reed opinionated, or you can also call him decisive, right?
Yes.
Either way.
Yeah. Well, you know, my wife puts it this way and God bless her for it. She says, I'm highly, highly opinionated, but when new information comes in that contradicts what I was thinking before, I change my opinions. So she says, that's the one saving grace about the fact that I am opinionated to the point of arrogance, is that at least I'll update my thinking when something new comes in, which, you know, hey, in this day and age might be somewhat unusual, I suppose. But yes, I do believe that if you're going to think something, you should think it all the way.
You know, I was going to say that I've noticed about you is that you do have some firmly held beliefs on how equipment's supposed to work, how procedures should work, how the industry perhaps should work, but you are open to new technology ideas. And I like that because we're going to be talking about some ways that technology and new technology has affected process and neighborliness in terms of signals and things like that. And you were telling me that you're using a product that happens to come from Telos to get some audio here back and forth. And so we're going to hear about that. And I love chatting with people who have firm ideas about things. not the crazy, you know, not the ones who are stuck with, you know, there's nothing better than a 78 RPM record because that really had the high frequencies. You know, I'm not talking about that.
CDs are terrible.
So that's what we're going to be doing. Hey, Aaron, I want to tell you and the audience about this gangly looking box right here. It's full of antennas right now. This is the Max Connect Wireless data modem. Now, yes, it's a cradle point modem. And in that regard, it's just like every other cradle point modem, at least of the same design. It's got a lot of options. It's got a WAN port and a LAN port, which means you can have the if the WAN is working fine, then the wireless doesn't do anything. But if the WAN goes away, you can have your wireless come in, or you can load balance and switch over, all that kind of stuff. But what's key about this from Max Connect Wireless, Max Connect Wireless is actually a carrier. It's a wireless carrier. Now, yes, they piggyback from other carriers. This one right now is tied to Verizon. I can also tie it to AT&T. But what's cool about this for broadcasters is that you get prioritized data, absolutely prioritized over all those other jerks who are updating their Facebook. In other words, if this was on Sprint, and by the way, now Sprint is available with Max Connect Wireless. But here's my phone. It's on, that's not Sprint. It's on T-Mobile. I meant to say T-Mobile, not Sprint. You can get this on T-Mobile now. This phone is on T-Mobile. And guess what? If I were in a high saturation environment, like at a football stadium at halftime, this phone, you know, it'd be hit or miss as far as how much data was coming through. I may or may not be able to load a web page well in a highly saturated environment. Max Connect Wireless gets through because you have priority over everybody except first responders. And that's what makes this modem and this service from Josh Bone at Bone Broadcast, this is what makes it valuable for broadcasters. If you're doing audio or audio and video, you need this. You need every packet to go through. In fact, I was set up to use this service today to do the show because the building I'm in has been without internet for 5.5 days. It just came on 3 hours ago. So I'm not going to use the Max Connect Wireless today because we got internet. But you can see that I'm in a Verizon area, got full bars here. And actually this thing carried us through I got here 2 days ago. This has carried us through, and all of our broadcast operations for the last 2 days. So delighted about that. Check it out. MaxConnectWireless.com. It's a funny way to spell it. There you can see T-Mobile, Verizon, and AT&T are your available carriers. And, you get a high priority, private APN with this. So check it out. I'll have a link in the show notes. All right. We're talking to Aaron Reed. And Aaron, I guess we can jump right into the first topic that you wanted to talk about. And this is a combination of technical and regulatory. And so it's an interesting problem. You know, whenever you make a law, whenever you make a rule, right, there's always unintended consequences or loopholes that you may have missed. I heard a comedian the other day tell his kids, he said, I told my kids that they were too lazy to bake the casserole that my wife had made. I'm talking about my wife, I mean the comedian's wife. He said, my wife made a casserole. There's a sticker note on top of it. Aaron, you're wondering where I'm going with the story. There's a sticker on top of it that says, bake at 350 for 20 minutes. 350 for 20 minutes. And the guy got home, the dad got home, and guess what? They had ordered a pizza. And why did you order a pizza? Mom made this casserole. They said, it was too much trouble to put that in the oven. So they ordered a pizza. God. So the parents said to the kids, you are not allowed to order pizza anymore if mom has gone to the trouble to make you a dinner. You do the dinner according to mom's directions. Same thing happened the next night, except they got home. The dinner wasn't cooked. They had ordered Chinese. They didn't order pizza. They ordered Chinese. So... And so when you make a rule, you know, you can't anticipate everything. So that's enough for me. I'd like for you to set up for us the scenario in which a law, rule, procedure has been passed by the FCC that doesn't take into account a fairly common scenario and one that you're involved with right now and the consequences and you know, how are we going to handle this? So go ahead and kind of set that situation up for us.
Certainly, certainly. So I confess, this has a professional resonance for me because it's actually happening at my station. But what it has to do with is asymmetrical HD radio injection levels. If you're familiar at all with HD radio, you know how there's an analog carrier in the center of the spectrum, and on the side you've got twin redundant digital carriers, and there's a limit to how much power you can use in digital. And for a while ago, the FCC allowed everyone to use the standard of -14 dBC. That's pretty powerful, but you can do more. If the circumstances permit, regulatorily wise, you can go up to -10, which is more than doubling that digital power. So obviously, if you know, if your transmitter supports it and you're using HD radio and you want to do that, there's good reason to do it.
Hey, Aaron, now, the rub if, is, if I can, yeah. If I could pause you for just a second, there are some people in our audience who may not know what these numbers represent. And let me just give a quick history. When HD radio was introduced, the HD carriers, this is on FM, the HD carriers were 20 dB, 20 decibels lower than the analog carrier. So if your analog carrier was, let's say, 100,000 watts, 20 dB is that ends up being 1%, right? So your digital carrier was 1% or 1,000 watts. So if you're a 100,000 watt station, you may be in a class B area or an area where, where the biggest station is going to be 50,000 watts. So your digital carriers were only 500 watts for HD radio. And they did this for a while. It fit within the mask. And then a few years ago, the FCC was petitioned for and they agreed, you know what? We're going to allow, instead of -20 dB from DBC, dB below carrier, instead of -20 dB, we're going to let stations do -14 dB. And then some people said, hey, if there's not going to cause any interference, let's do -10. So instead of being... instead of having a 50,000 watt FM station and only doing a 500 watts of HD at minus, and I'm sorry, I'm not going to get the numbers right, but you could do a lot more power in your HD, still way under your analog carrier, but you could do a lot more power on your HDs. You may have to buy a new transmitter. Maybe your transmitter will already do it, depending on how much headroom it had. And this extended the HD coverage or made it a bit more on par with the analog coverage. Now, the problem is when stations are spaced really close to each other, more power in those sideband, you know, digital carriers could cause harmful interference to the analog of other stations. And so you had to be, you had to have some spacing requirements met. And hey, by the way, Chris Tobin just, Chris said he'll be right back. Okay, Chris is going to be with us in just a minute. So stations on a case-by-case basis have been allowed to do this, go some blanket go up in power, but if you want to go up even higher, you had to have permission. And then there's an idea of asymmetrical power, so that let's say I had a station too close on one side of me on the dial, but not on the other side. Well, maybe one side of where no interference, I could be -10, and the other side where there could be interference would be -14. Aaron, did I kind of set that up right? Have I got the basic facts about straight?
Beautifully, absolutely beautifully. And if you, the only thing I'll add is that if you're not into engineering, when you talk about DBC or dB, it's a logarithmic equation. It gets kind of complicated. But the nice thing is that at -10 and at -20, the numbers happen to work out that -20 is 1% and -10 is 10%. So
that's right. Happens to work out that way.
So if you had a 100,000 watt station, you're at -20, you've got 1,000 watts. But if you go to -10, now you got 10,000 watts.
10,000 watts of HD, that's right.
Yeah, and the thing is, remember, is that HD, it's a digital signal. It's far more robust than analog. So that 10,000 watts works really well. I mean, it works almost as well, actually in some cases a little better than the analog 100,000 watts. But so as you described, there's this thing called asymmetrical. Now, right now, it's an experimental license. You can't just do that whenever the whenever you're strikes your fancy. You can change both carriers at the same level. But if you want to do different, you got to apply the FCC for an experimental license. Now, last month in December, both the NAB and NPR petitioned the FCC to allow asymmetrical operation without an experimental license. This is great news. I think it's great. I'm glad they're doing it. But it's revealed a lack of regulatory framework in a way that personally and professionally I think should be addressed now rather than waiting until it becomes a problem. And that is, what happens when you go above the default -14? And let's say you go up to -10. And at the time when you do this, it's perfectly okay. All the tools say there's no other stations nearby. You're not going to interfere with one. No one's going to interfere with you. It's all good. But down the road, 2, 5, 10, 20 years down the road, somebody moves a signal, makes it bigger, uses a directional antenna, whatever it is, it's closer to yours now. And now, under the old rules, you wouldn't have been allowed to go to -10. you're only allowed to say minus 14, but you're already at minus 10. What do you do? And right now there's nothing, there's no regulatory framework. It's basically petition the FCC, find people who are being affected by it. And maybe if you sacrifice a goat in the dark light of the moon, they'll, you know, issue a ruling. You know, there needs to be, in my opinion, a way of dealing with this so that there isn't just utter chaos if someone moves a station down the road. So, like, for example, this happened with us. There's a station in Connecticut that at the time they went to minus 10. It was perfectly okay then. Then my company, the Publix Radio, the company I work for, I should say, purchased a signal one channel higher and mm-hmm. And moved it a lot closer to Connecticut. And when that happened, under the old rules, the Connecticut station wouldn't have been allowed to be at minus 10. They would have only been allowed to be at minus 14. And right now there's basically nothing. There's no regulatory framework. There's nothing to say this is what you do or this is what you can't do. I would say what you should do is if this situation happens, if one of the parties asks for it, the original party has to turn the power back down. And that's part of the reason why I think asymmetrical is so important. This other station in Connecticut is running minus 10 on both carriers. Right now, yeah. For them to lower one, they have to get an experimental license. That's a lot of work, a lot of hassle. I don't blame them for not wanting to go through that just because I'm asking them to do so when there's no reason, no legal reason for them to have to do it. But I think it would be appropriate for the FCC to say no if someone asks. You got to do it. If nobody asks, you know, perhaps you own both stations and you don't care, or perhaps you're friends with the other owner, or perhaps you've worked out some kind of a side deal and you're both okay with it, then fine. You know, FCC says, all right, you guys don't care. We don't care. We'll let you keep doing it. But I do think there needs to be something in place to allow this to be addressed without it just being the wild, wild west. Because right now it's whoever gets there first wins for all time.
Your FM, that moved in, that moved closer to the other station, your FM that moved mm-hmm. was perfectly legal in doing so based on the analog contours, based on the analog spacing, right? And,
yes, that's
and the only reason that those guys, that the other guys could have gone minus 10 anyway was because let's say far spaced. Maybe there was an extra, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 miles of spacing, less than there had to be, less than you'd get right up into a short spacing thing. So the analog, you're okay from analog point of view, you fit within the regulations, but if it started out that way, they wouldn't have been able to be minus 10 on their HD carrier. They would have had to have been minus 14. They couldn't have gone to minus 10. So you've moved totally legally. They're legal, you're legal, except now their previously approved high power level on their HD carrier is now higher than they could have done before you moved. And there's potentially an area of interference. Tell you what, we're going to get into some details as to, have you actually heard interference? What do you think it is? How is this affecting your listeners? Have you heard from any of them? What are some concrete things, if any, at this point? We're going to take a break here for a second, but I want to bring in Chris Tobin. He was able to join us. Hey, Chris, welcome in. Glad you're here. Uh-oh, no audio from Chris.
There you go. My computer suddenly got audio sync issues, so we'll see what happens. Hopefully you can hear me.
Yeah, I think you're on the computer's mic at the moment. It doesn't sound like the big mic in front of you. I could be wrong.
Coming through on the microphone?
I tell you what, we're going to take
I'll be back.
We'll tell you, we'll be right back. Hey, This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by another company that does digital stuff. You know, we talked this whole digital age and we got the cool things going on. We'll be right back after this word from CalRec. Hang on.
CalRec Type R is a modular, expandable IP-based radio system featuring 3 slimline panels, a fader panel, a large soft panel, and a small soft panel easily configured to give the operator full control. Layouts are saved and recalled quickly between shows. A single 2RU core with integrated I/O gets customers up and running fast, and that single core can power up to 3 independent mixing environments with no sharing of DSP resources. Available in 4 DSP packs, and as your station grows, larger packs can be added, enabling it to grow with you. Power to the surface is supplied via standard PoE switches, keeping cabling to a minimum. Type R is fully AES-67 compatible, as defined by SMPTE 2110, which means that it is also compliant with NMOS discovery and connection management specs. All these features combined make Type R the most flexible radio console you can buy. Find out more at calrec.com/twert.
Thanks a lot to CalRec for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Hey, it's Kirk Harnack along with Chris Tobin and our guest Aaron Reed from Rhode Island. He's with Public Radio there, the Public's Radio, as they call it. We'll have Aaron explain a couple of things behind him in just a minute. Hey, see, Chris, are you back with us, Chris Tobin? Well, I guess not. He looks pretty frozen. All right, maybe we'll get Chris back. Aaron, you were about to tell us about, what was it? I'm flummoxed now. What part of this? What part of this? I told you that. Actual interference.
Yes.
Have you noticed any, or is it theoretical?
It's a little of both, actually. You got to remember, the FCC only considers interference within your 60 dBU service contour. And we haven't really noticed any there. But the rub on this is, remember, this is a brand new facility. It's the first time at this tower. It's the first time at this height, first time at this power, and first time with this kind of HD. So it's very hard to say, hey, something's different and changed and not the way it should be when everything has changed. You know, how do you determine that there is actually interference when you don't have a baseline to draw from? Now, that said, there was an interesting situation last month where it was cold and somewhat rainy, stormy day in Connecticut. And apparently there was an icing issue. And as I found out later through some back channels, and they were at reduced power. And there were a couple people who are affiliated with our station who tried tuning us in that day and found that they could hear our 89.3 signal much, much better than usual. So that would be, it's a little circumstantial, I admit, but it would be pretty strong evidence that there is indeed some noticeable interference. And of course, it makes sense. I mean, you're getting much closer to this other station's service contour. They're running minus 10, which is a lot of power. That power is partially extruding into the next channel over, which is our channel. So it makes a lot of sense that there would be issues there. Now, one of the things we're actually hoping to do to help with this is to apply for asymmetrical HD injection ourselves on our signal. Actually, just about to file the paperwork, so that hopefully we can, anyone with an HD radio at least, can hear, can lock onto the digital signal and get a better listening experience. Obviously, that's not a full solution, but it's better than nothing, you know.
You know, I'm no FCC consulting engineer, but it seems like if we made minus 10 dBC on your HD, if we made that a secondary service as opposed to minus 14 being a primary service, and I may have the definitions all wrong, but you know how a translator can be wiped off the map if a full power, full service station moves such that the translator is no longer allowed, right?
I mean, I wonder, that would be a legal issue. And of course, just being a humble engineer, I'm always a little reticent to wade into the world of legal opinions. But, I mean, conceptually, let us say, I think that's a great idea. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to say, okay, anything above minus 14, it's considered secondary. And everybody should know that going in. I mean, now, I do feel a little bad for these guys, because here I am saying, hey, you spent, time, money, man hours on all the, getting a transmitter big enough, having engineers install it, having an attorney file for all this stuff, and do all that work. And now here someone wanders along one day and says, oops, no, you can't have it anymore. And admittedly, this is something you might be thinking, well, that'll never happen to me. Our commercial allocation band is already completely full. Well, that's true. That's the commercial band. But what about the non-commercial band where it's all contour based and it's the Wild West? And oh, by the way, there's a rumored NCE filing window that's supposed to be coming up within the next year or so. And that could certainly change the equation for an awful lot of people.
Hey, Chris Tobin, let's see if he's actually here yet. Chris, are you there?
Let's see if this works since we've updated our OS on this Mac. Apparently, it's broken everything there is that we can use.
Oh, my gosh. Did you put Catalina on?
No, it's High Sierra.
But, what?
For some reason, the performance of this machine has gone down considerably, and I've been using it for the last four episodes. So that's very, very strange.
Well, hey, welcome in. Glad you're here. Chris comes to us from Newark, New Jersey, and WBGO and in some unnamed secret announce booth. Glad to see you.
Well, it is an unnamed announce booth, and it is an announce booth, and not much to it, but it does work. And I hear Aaron's concerns, and I've been reading and watching people talking about the asymmetry HD and what to do and what happens to this and what happens to that. Boy, I'll tell you, here in New York, it's interesting to watch the carriers and look at stuff and the congestion on the band. I can't imagine what it's like in a rural area where you have sort of half and half.
Chris, you should just go ahead and put a sign outside that door and call it the Chris Tobin announce booth and just be done with it.
Well, I could do that and get solicitations. Ooh, get some sponsorships.
But of course, then they might ask you to clean it. Oh, Chris, it's your booth. You got to clean it.
I am chief engineer, therefore I'm doing that already.
So
Aaron knows. Aaron's laughing. Yes, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So, Aaron, thank you for the compliment saying, hey, that could be a good idea, making minus 10 dBC a secondary service, but minus 14 something that you're entitled to if you're doing HD. And, you know, here's an analogy. Now, I'm not a boat, lake, or water person. I don't own a boat, but I've been to a few boat docks, and I've been on a few people's boats. And that's kind of a big deal here in Tennessee. Actually, I'm in Mississippi now, but. Let's say that, you know, there's a bunch of homeowners on an inlet, on a lake, and they have docks, right? And a person buys a home, and there's no boat dock. So they go ahead and build a boat dock. And guess what? The no-wake zone used to end at the last person's boat dock, you know, toward the lake. And I build a boat dock, and now, you know, the sign is still at my neighbor's house, no-wake zone. And yet, hey, here's my boat dock. You shouldn't be able to make a wake in front of my boat dock. I want it to be nice and calm. So the idea is we got to move the sign. We got to say, hey, guess what, boats? You got to go a little farther out now past Kirk's dock before you make your wake. And to me, that's a bit analogous to this. Hey, somebody's moved in. Sorry, can't do 10 dBC and minus 10 dBC anymore. You're going to have to accommodate them as if you applied today when they were here. So anyway, it does become an interesting conundrum. And I'm sure there's, well, Aaron, do you have an FCC attorney who's working on this for you?
Well, we did submit I've been in touch with the FCC over this issue, and I've expressed basically what I just told you guys already. I do think we have some loose plans, especially as part of when and if the FCC actually issues a notice for proposed rulemaking over asymmetrical operation, which I believe they are expected to do fairly soon, I think within the next month or two, certainly by the summer. And when that happens, I think we will be more formally filing that through our attorney. Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. So an NPRM is coming, a notice of proposed rulemaking then.
I think so. Scuttlebutt, but it's logical scuttlebutt.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. Well, good. Well, I think we've covered that subject to some degree. Well, I'd like to get maybe a consulting engineer on in the next few months, see if that goes somewhere. But yeah, it's a little problem. The rules don't account for everything. Coming up, we're going to be talking about smart speakers. And I know we've talked about audio processing for smart speakers, but there are some interesting other problems that have to do with station promotion, have to do with your audience getting the station yours that they want to listen to and not being directed to somebody else. And Aaron and his team there at the Publix Radio in Rhode Island have some ideas about how to make that happen. And Chris, I know you've got some ideas too on this, so you two are going to get to talk about that. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by my friends at Angry Audio. The website is angryaudio.com, and I want to show you this. This is one of my favorite gizmos. This is the guest gizmo from angryaudio.com. And this is a headphone amp with a built-in cough switch, which also knows when to be an on and off switch. push to come on, push to go off, and also push and hold to cough. It's kind of smart. It's got a power connector on the back. It has a logic connector. It's got left and right audio in, an insert point as well. And then on the front, of course, it's got the headphone jack and the volume control. It's good and loud. And here's what I really like about this. You see that it's got a rather large bezel, whichever you want, around the front here. If you just drill a round hole in your furniture, a 2¾-inch hole with a 2¾-inch hole saw, standard issue equipment, this will drop right into it, cover up the round hole, and voila, it looks like you spent all day making a square hole. It's really cool. This is upside down. This is the Guest Gizmo from Angry Audio. And Angry Audio has a lot of other cool things as well. They still have some products from, remember, Studio Hub and Radio Systems? Well, they still have this beautiful Studio Hub headphone amp. If you want to go with something like this, it comes in the Decora format. You can also get a mounting bracket like this. This is really heavy duty ABS plastic. I haven't had a disc jockey yet break one of these off, and it fits right in there. You can put this mount under the counter, and look, it's got, you know, sides that are friendly to your knees. It won't take a bite out of your pants or your knee with that. Or you can mount this like I did at my radio stations in Samoa. I used these brackets and mounted them in the little garage, if you will, the garage that is at the bottom of my tabletop equipment racks. So I got a little garage under there where, you know, the keyboard slides back. I put these right there. Really great. Works terrific for that. And of course, these have got the Studio Hub standard Gazintas and Gazoutas. So you just plug a Cat 5 cable into that. Let's take a look at the website. If Suncast has that ready, you can get all kinds of other products, including the new Bluetooth audio gadget from Angry Audio. The Bluetooth gadget is really cool. It lets you take your cell phone. Let's say you've got a song on your cell phone that you want to play, or an interview that you have on your cell phone. Hook up the Bluetooth audio gadget, and you'll get great quality Bluetooth audio from your Bluetooth phone into the gadget. And then, voila, put that on the air. You can also use it in a two-way mode, so you can use your phone as kind of like a telephone hybrid. You can use your cell phone if you just occasionally put callers on the air. Or special guests, you can use that with the Bluetooth gadget. They also have a fail-safe gadget, a talk show gadget, lots more stuff. Check them out, angryaudio.com. When you find the cool product you want, including all the cables from Studio Hub, when you find what you want, call your favorite dealer and get it ordered. Yeah. For Angry Audio, as they say, you find a product you like, get you one. Appreciate Angry Audio sponsoring the show. All right, Kirk Harnack, Chris Tobin's here. We're talking to Aaron Reed, and next we're going to talk about smart speakers. Aaron, you described some real hit or miss problems with smart speakers now, and I mentioned to you that my radio stations, we've got about 9 or 10 stations streaming, and our stations depend on being properly listed over at TuneIn. So when you say, you know, the female word that starts with an A, they didn't call it the speaker of the house, I have no idea, but when you say her name and say play call letters or slogan, you're telling me there's problems with that. And we've noticed them too. Set up the problem for us with that.
Yes. And I have to say, I'm interested as much as like what I want to share with you. I'm also interested in what you guys want to share with me, because this is one of those things where we're all trying to figure this out and we're all just making it up as we go along. But what I have noticed personally is that while you can use the TuneIn database, it's a common app. It's actually Google Homes rely pretty much exclusively on TuneIn right now. You can, but it's not great. The database of TuneIn tends to have a lot of errors in it. It takes a lot of work to correct those errors sometimes. And at the moment, I believe they're still not accepting any new stations. And it wasn't all that long ago that all five of the major broadcast groups, like iHeart, Cumulus, Townsquare, Alpha Media, and Entercom, I think, too, maybe Beasley as well, they all pulled their stations out of TuneIn, which means you can't listen to any of those stations through TuneIn. And that certainly, you know, makes you wonder about, okay, how good a model is TuneIn's business model at this point? You know, I'm not worried about it, but it's a concern. And so if you're relying heavily on this TuneIn database, like I said, it can have a lot of errors. And they can be compounded by some of the things that you can control. For example, if you have call letters. call letters are a great way to distinguish your station from someone else's station. But what if your call letters are very similar sounding to someone else's? For example, our call letters, we almost never use them here, but ours are WNPN, November, Paul, November. N and M for Michael sound very similar, and lots of smart speakers out there have trouble distinguishing between the two. And I can speak for myself when I say, you know, I'll use the word echo to substitute for the name that cannot be spoken lest you set them off amongst all our listeners. The echo play WNPN, there's lots of times when it misinterprets that as WMPN, which I think is out in Wisconsin or something like that. I forget what it is. But similarly, there's the Publix radio. Well, here in New England, you know, Publix, it's not a common word. No one cares. In Florida, Publix is widely known as a grocery store chain, and other parts of the South as well. Now, it's spelled differently, but it sounds exactly the same. And I almost said it. Echo often can't tell the difference unless you're very careful about it. And though there is one way around this, and that is you can create your own Echo skills. That's skill with a capital S. And we've done that here at the Publix Radio. We have a main skill for that just does everything. It has our live stream. It has all our podcasts. We don't have a whole lot of them right now, but we do have a few. And it has a newscast feature so that the most recent local newscast gets recorded, uploaded, and in about 10 minutes after it happens, you can listen to it through the skill. And what this means is that, yes, you do have your listeners do have to download and install the skill. So it requires a certain amount of promotion on the air, on your website, on your social media. You got to let people know about it and then hope that they install it because they like the extra features it provides. That will teach your Echo to listen to a specific phrase, like in our case, the Publix radio. When I have that skill installed, if I say Echo, open the Publix radio, it knows exactly what I'm talking about and it opens it every time. When I do it with TuneIn, it's a roll of the dice. Sometimes it gets it, sometimes it doesn't. And with Google Homes, it wasn't until they released a software update about 3 or 4 months ago, it would never get it. It would get about 1 in 10 listeners would be able to successfully listen on a Google Home. We started recommending the Amazon product instead. And in our particular case, I'm convinced that this will eventually be the killer app, so to speak, but the statistics aren't quite bearing it out yet, but the statistics are also very crude at this stage of the game. There's a thing called flash briefing within the Amazon architecture. It's a separate skill, but it's just for newscasts. So you can set it up and say, Echo, what's the news? And it will play our most recent newscast, which I think is really cool and really handy. I highly recommend stations that are even thinking about getting into smart speakers to go down that road and get both skills set up. I mean, if you're a news station, obviously, if you're not a news station, don't worry about it. But definitely think about how listeners are going to experience your content on the smart speaker. Get one and play around with it to make sure you're not surprised by something. And then think about how you're going to promote this, in social media, on the air and all that. And realize that just even though the growth of quote unquote radio listing on a smart speakers has been double digit for 5 years now, it's, you can't ignore it anymore, but it's not the same. You got to think of it differently. So that's my take. Chris, I want to hear what you guys think about it.
No, Chris is at Publix Radio there in Newark, New Jersey. Chris, what are you guys doing in terms of skills and getting your public to listen to smart speakers if that's what they want to do?
We're doing it in similar fashion. The good thing is our branding is based on all call letters. So WBGO is well known and easily distinguishable. And we've so far have not received too many complaints or concerns about not accessing us on the smart speaker platform. We've had occasional tune-in database issues and a few other databases that archive radio station streams. But other than that, we've been very successful. And we recently redid our social media platform approach, not the technology, but more of the behind the scenes, the back end people working on it. And I think what Aaron pointed out is what we've discovered, and we're working in the same direction of, let's get the skills up to speed to, so to speak, where we need to be so we can cover all bases as far as what people may call us or think of us as. And, in the jazz format that we have, yes, we're a music station, it's jazz, you couldn't be any more unique next to being a classical station. So it's interesting to find out how many of the platforms out there for this type of thing have a difficult time with us when it comes to certain music, you know, selection. But we're working through it, and it's going well. I mean, our audience is very driven, and I'm sure many of the other music stations, even spoken word stations that have a following that are very local, have an active and engaging audience. Our folks, boy, I tell you, we do one thing, you know, in a morning, say this morning we do something during the morning jazz program, the morning show host, and by the afternoon we're already receiving emails and calls from people about, can we do this? Can we sign up for the event that you guys talked about? And you're like, wow, that was pretty fast. We just put it out there. So yeah, we've been happy. The smart speakers are working well for us.
By the way, I'm distracted by things going on around me. I see on the monitor behind me here, Chris, in case you didn't hear, I'm sitting in a building that 5.5 days ago, a tornado went straight overhead this building. It knocked 25 feet off of our STL tower. And it took down, you know, those big high voltage transmission towers that go cross country, the big steel ones. Yeah, it took out four of those across the road from here. Took a billboard out right behind me outside. And we just got internet back here 3 hours ago. And my business partner here, Larry, is looking at footage I see right now. She's trying to find footage of when the tornado went over on Saturday morning, this past Saturday morning. So he's going to try to grab that footage and save it. So anyway, that's what's going on the monitors behind me. So back to this, I hear both of you guys saying that incorporating, if you want to be unique and you want a tune in or your skill or whatever to find you, of course, your skill is going to find you. But if you want to be found, you got to incorporate something unique, which would be your call letters. Nobody else is going to have your call letters. But the problem comes if you have call letters that sound like something else or have letters like M or N or C or P or B, you know, things that Aaron, what was the word we figured out? Homonyms.
Homophones, I think it's the
homophones,
word.
Maybe. I don't know.
Phones, not phobes. That would not be what we're talking about. Yeah. I think it's phones. Homophones.
Anyway,
it doesn't have to be call letters. It can be something like Rhode Island Public Radio, for example, or Vermont Public Radio, or New Hampshire Public Radio, or Cleveland. What's the one? The Idea Stream, I think, is how they've branded for years and years. Go ahead, Chris.
I was just saying, along the line of what Aaron's pointing out, it doesn't have to be call letters. Our branding are the call letters. Not everybody's going to use their call letters. I mean, let's take, for instance, we'll use an example. The Malrite station in New York City from 1985 used to be called Z100, which is great. However, Z100 is also available probably in 16 other markets nowadays. Z104 in Savannah, Georgia was another popular one. So you need to look at your branding and say, okay, what used to work on the radio was great because it was localized to you, and maybe on the web because it's localized to your website, if you will. Now what you have to look at is, hey, how do we brand ourselves so that it makes sense for the new platforms? And yes, call letters may not be the case. You may have some wacky call letters that are useless, or you may have some that do work. Or in the case of Publix Radio, and Publix being the grocery store chain in the South, yeah, you're right. The difference is the letter X and letter CS. But that doesn't work as far as auditory recognition. So I would say it's a challenge that the broadcasters, radio especially, need to start looking at and say, hey, maybe our brand name needs to be a little different now to still say the same thing, but be more conducive to capturing the audience on the speaker, the smart speaker platform.
And we've had some listeners actually tell us that they didn't want to use the skill because they felt you had to say too much. I mean, right now you can say Echo play WXYZ, or you can say Echo play the Publix radio even. And that won't get the skill. That opens TuneIn, via TuneIn, I should say. It'll try and play it through TuneIn. To get the skill, you have to say Echo open the Publix radio, or Echo play the Publix radio, or what was it? Shoot, I forget the exact vocal phrase now. See, and then there you go. It's already a lot to remember when it's easier just to say Echo play the Publix radio. And yes, your point about how, you know, Z100 or, you know, any one of a hundred other commonly used radio branding names, Power, Coast, Jack, Mike, you know, all these other things, that were relatively generic. I mean, with smart speakers, they just don't work because there might be 10 other stations just in the United States, never mind across the world, that might be using the exact same broadcasting, exact same branding. I mean,
we've kind of noticed that there might be some geolocation to what you ask for and what it gives you. So one of our stations that I'm part owner of has a difficult to pronounce call sign, and we don't use it on the air except for the legal ID, and that's KHKU, and that's in Lihue, on the island of Kauai, in Hawaii. And we brand it Star 94.3. If you ask the Echo for Star 94.3 and you're in Hawaii, you get our station. Now, my Echo in Nashville, I've asked for it plenty of times, and I also get the station I'm looking for. But we've had people tell us in different parts of the country, if they ask for, because kind of weird, this station actually has 40 owners. Can you believe that? 40 owners.
Okay.
And yeah, we pitched in $10 and got us a radio station. But if they ask for it in different parts of the country, they may be led to a different Star 94.3 that's closer to them geographically. So that's interesting. And I've asked it for enough times on my Echo as KHKU that now it seems to know that's what I'm going to ask for. Is it really that smart? Is the Echo that intelligent?
The Amazon ones do have a certain amount of intelligence in that regard. They will pay attention if you're asking it for the same thing over and over and over again. I found Google Home to be far more hit or miss. And the really weird thing is that I found that, A, the geolocation is all over the map with Google Homes. But the really weird thing is that I have, I have my iPhone right here, and I load in the Google Assistant app. Now, the Google Assistant can work through what appears to be the exact same architecture that a Google Home uses. Now, I have confirmed this through NPR's tech staff, who have confirmed it with their interactions with Google Home people, that it's actually not the same infrastructure. It's a different system. But here's the hell of it. I managed to finally force it on my iPhone app to stop reading it as the Publix radio, the grocery change, and start reading it as the Publix radio, like the poster behind me. And then all of a sudden, my Google Home started behaving too. So even though it's separate architectures, they're somehow talking to each other, which, of course, with Google, I mean, shocking, right? Everything they do is interconnected. Yeah. But, even if you don't want it to be. It's very strange. It's very hit or miss. Personally, that's why I prefer the Amazon system more, because you get a lot more control of it through the skills. Admittedly, the skills are not easy to code up yourself. I took one look at it and said, hell no, we're hiring somebody. We ended up going with Stream Guys. They're very popular amongst public radio. They're a little more expensive, but they've done really good work, and they've really been helpful at, holding our hand and getting us through the process and helping us get, user stats after the fact and all that kind of stuff. So from my perspective, it was worth it. There are other people out there. I'm sure if you just Google custom Alexa, custom Amazon skills, you'll be able to find somebody who can help you on that front. Or heck, if you feel like you want to take a crack at it yourself, go for it.
Interesting. Chris, you got any comments on making She Who Shall Not Be Named, the Echo, just work as well as possible? What have you guys found any other tricks that you want to pass along?
No. There's no tricks. I mean, you're at the mercy of the platform and how they perceive its use to be best to the mass audience or the masses. I think the trick is for us broadcasters to sort of break out of our mold of how we do things, because that's just the way it's been, and start thinking like our audience does and say, okay, if I'm an audience member and their age group and what I'm doing, how am I using the technology? Maybe this would be a better way to reach us. We've come across, because we have several programs, it's not just music. We do several programs that for music discovery and other forms of jazz music, blues, and other things, that it's tough to try and find a common descriptor of a word or a phrase to be able to associate and brand the same. So right now we're just keeping things under the main branding and going that direction, hoping that when people find us, they get inquisitive and start looking for more stuff by asking questions, of their box, their speaker. It's growing, it's going fast, it's great, and there's a lot of stuff, but Aaron's point is spot on when it comes to, hey, there's a lot of things that we got to do and try, and it's going to be interesting to see. There's no one silver bullet. And I would say make sure you have the right people programming, you know, if you're going to do the skill sets, the skills that is, make sure you do have people that understand your business. So I'd say, you know, work alongside of them. I'm sure Aaron has probably done that or understands what I'm saying is, I've worked with some programmers for broadcast applications and they come to us and go, hey, do this, this, and this. I'm like, dude, have you ever been in a radio station? Have you sat in a studio with our guys? This is not going to be close. do your diligence. Yeah, you laugh. But I was just talking with someone today about some stuff and they were taking their head against the wall going, we tried our best to explain to the software programmer, here's what we need to do because here's what we do as a radio organization. And they came back with something totally alien because they thought this is what their idea of radio is based on their life experience. And that's
in my case, we're public radio guys. It's a different kettle of fish when you're in commercial radio too. Although I will say this, it's if you're in commercial radio, it's worth keeping an eye on what NPR and public radio stations in general are doing with smart speakers. Because I can tell you the folks at NPR are jumping into smart speakers with both feet. They have been very, very aggressive about working with Amazon and as much as they can working with Google and to a lesser extent with Apple. Not that Apple's like horrible or anything. It's just that the Apple HomePod is a very, very niche product. But they've been trying to work with all of them to push the concept of radio within a smart speaker architecture as far forward as quickly as they can. And I think they're being more aggressive than most, if not all, the commercial radio outlets as well. So certainly if you want to see where the innovation is, and that means not only seeing things that work, but just as importantly, seeing things that aren't working, keep an eye on NPR on this front.
Well, I had this conversation recently with some people from the business side of things. Now, yes, I'm a public radio station. So the perception is by some people, well, you guys can't make a profit. You're not allowed to. That's not how it works. We still need to survive. Still need to operate. It's done in a different fashion. But you, as a radio station, a public radio station, whether you're spoken word or your music, it doesn't matter, either one. You need to look at and you call your program director at the office and say, we need to talk at lunch about something. Ask them point blank, who do we share audience with in our marketplace? And if any of the answers come back with at least one or two commercial stations, you better be following what they're doing with their smart speaker technology because that audience is also listening to your station, so they're being exposed to a different thing. So you don't want to be clashing. You want to find a happy medium so that you can garner the rewards of both cross-listenership and delivery of what you do to them as a value-added listening service. So I know for a fact that the three commercial stations that we share audience with, they are very active in the smart speaker world, and thankfully our branding, our position complements what they're doing, so our sharing of audience doesn't get clobbered in the wrong way. It actually complements and strengthens both. Because I've had arguments with some folks saying, well, if we're going to do that, that'll just help them as a competition. It's like, you didn't ask the audience to listen to them. You did the Nielsen PPM, and you discovered that you're sharing audience. Guess what? They found their other choices. You're one of the choices. Stick with it. Grow it. And, generate revenue that way. So the smart speaker platform, you've got to look at from various places. And you're right, Aaron. NPR is working real hard to push and say, hey, let's make something happen. Because they know. I'm sure they do the stats and look and see who's listening to what, cross listenership they have out there in their marketplace with affiliates.
Well, you know what they say. You can't make someone listen to you, but you sure as heck can make them listen to someone else.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, that's well said. And at that well said note, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have a couple of tips of the week. Aaron, this is the first you've heard about it, but maybe you can come up with a tip of the week for us on any of the topics you've talked about. What do you want our listeners to walk away with? Chris Tobin always has a tip of the week. He's great at that, and I might have one figured out as well. Hey, I just went through a tornado here, so maybe so. We'll be right back after this word from our friends at VoxPro.
Yo, what's up? Live from NAB 2018. Hey, it's Caden. You need to check out Wheatstone and VoxPro 7.1. The upgrades are amazing. If you're a jock, if you're a talent, producer, whatever, morning show, everyone knows VoxPro. Everyone uses VoxPro. Everyone loves VoxPro. But now the features for this year, 2018, on 7.1 are amazing. If you're using version 4, 5, 6, and you go to 7, this is exactly what you're missing right here. The features are a game changer. It's going to cut down your editing time by like 80%, depending on what you use Vox Pro for. And with version 7.1, introducing unlimited Praktik button bars right here, hotkeys right here. I'm going to show you coming out of a song.
Bad things. It's a lot of bad things that they wish and wish and wish and wish.
So you're coming out of your song?
Yeah.
Start your next song right here. It's basically an entire production room right on Vox Pro. So it's the Vox Pro we know and love with a ton more features. And now this is the ultimate game changer right here, effect macros. So instead of hitting your effects button bar and going up here using your mouse for every effect, you do it right here with one click of the mouse, and you're going to cut down your editing time by about 80% without even touching this new sexy black controller. Check it out right here, Wheatstone Vox Pro 7.1 at NAB in Vegas 2018.
And you can get Vox Pro from Broadcasters General Store. Talk to Broadcasters General Store. Hey, we talked to them just today. Had to order a part for an STL dish that got wiped out by the tornado. But call them at 352-622-7700. That should be in your mental speed dial. Or go to bgs.cc and talk to Broadcasters General Store. They have got you covered for almost anything you need in broadcast. They have it or can get it really fast, and their prices just can't be beat. All righty. We got a couple things to finish up with, and I'm going to turn it over to Chris Tobin for his tip of the week. Chris, you've heard what Aaron had to say. Got anything related or something else?
No, well, something else. I mean, we're talking about content creation and stuff and, you know, smart speakers and everything else. So you know, you have these little bags that you get with your microphone, right? Yeah, I remember those. You got a couple of these. This is Biodynamic. And recently, we did some jazz remote last week for the winter here in the city. And something I've come across, which was very handy, you know, you're doing podcasts like this one. And then a lot of stations, they send their folks out and they say, well, you just set up and get some light on you and you do your thing. It's probably not always the best way to approach it. Because remember, if you make a really shoddy looking podcast, you're probably not going to make any money off it. So let's think smartly. So as radio stations doing podcasts, here's my little light kit. So I have a light. And then you say to yourself, what do you do? How do you stand it up? I have a tripod.
Yep.
And keep the batteries in here as well. There we go. Look at that. There's batteries there. Is that something?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, by the way, they're numbered. Why? Because in the case is a two-battery charger. So you know which one's charged and which one's still charging. It's very important to remember these things. Now, you may laugh, but I used this at this jazz event we did 4 days live in a small lounge club with two of our day parts. And oddly enough, we were set up in such a place that it was pretty dark except for one little spot above the announcer. And I wanted it to be able to take pictures and shoot video. So that little light sat on their equipment rack just off camera to their right, and it was fill light.
Oh, yeah.
Pictures we used, people loved it. The video crew was like, where's that person's light come from? This is perfect for us. I'm like, I'm just setting up so we can do things. Now, the reason I'm saying this is there's another source of revenue. Video, YouTube, whatever you want to call it, Vimeo, all the others. Radio stations need to start thinking beyond the auditory, because we're in a world where everybody uses the smartphone for consumption. And who knows what is it consuming? I ride the subways every day here in New York City, and I can count. Usually 15 to 20 people in the subway car are doing one of these. With headphones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if you could honestly say to yourself, wow, if half of those could be people viewing our video? Now, I say that because I worked for a radio station years ago here in New York City, where you could get into any cab in New York City and hear the radio station that I worked for. We didn't pay the cabbies for that. That was because the content is what they wanted. Just think if you could add video to the stuff you do.
Yeah.
The power you have, the marketing, the branding, that's what it's about. And yet, so far, not one market station does anything that people worth doing on this device. I've yet to see anybody come up with something that's worthwhile. All they do is a camera in the studio with the jock. Like, really? I mean, is that, why do I want to see somebody spinning or pressing automation button control? Thankfully, our videos are actually live studio performances with artists, and you can't get the song anywhere else. It's their only time you see them live.
Yeah.
That
I love that about live performance. Yeah, live performance spaces.
But that's
thanks,
the reality.
Chris. Thank you. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, sir. Aaron, you've got a quick tip for something you're very excited about.
Yes, yes. My wonderful wife turned me on to this. This is an Amazfit BIP, And it's a Amazfit with no E in it. And it's a fairly basic smartwatch. It's not actually related to Fitbit per se, but it's got a couple features on it that I think are really cool. Let's see if I can get it close enough so you can actually see it. But you'll notice that right now, for example, it's on. Like, you can see the display. And that's not because I pushed a button or because I, you know, turned my wrist a certain way. It's on all the time. And that's because it uses a different kind of LCD technology. As I understand it, it's the same kind that the old Game Boy Colors used to use. And that leads me to the reason why it's on all the time is that the battery in this thing, under ideal conditions, can last 45 days. Now, I found using it myself, I have to charge it about once every other week. So I get about 2 weeks out of it. But that's still a heck of a lot better than most smartwatches, which, you know, you're lucky if you get a day. And on top of it all, this one, let's see if I can get it close up to my camera here. All right, there we go. You can see that it shows seconds in digital form. It's amazing how few smartwatches do this. And it does it in a way that makes sense. You can, you can't really see it too clearly, but there's a, in the bottom corner there, there's a weather forecast with a high and a low and what the weather's going to be. So that's pretty handy. You know, I can see the date and the day. It also, this particular watch face, I mean, you can change this at will. It's just a digital display. You can pick any one of 1,000. But it, you know, shows my steps and what my heart rate. I don't use the heart rate sensor on this, but it does have one. So, and it gives me pretty much any notification that my iPhone puts out. Well, actually, I turn it off for a few things. I don't use it for Facebook, and I don't use it for, I don't use it for any social media. But, you know, my emails, my personal email and my work email, when my phone is ringing. So if I forget and leave the ringer off, I still know when it's ringing. Text messages will show up here. It'll show the first few lines of a text message and who sent it. So if I glance at my wrist, instead of fishing my phone out of my holster while I'm driving, for example, I can just do a quick glance and say, oh, I need to pull over and take this. This is important. Or, that can wait till I get home. You know, that sort of thing. So the best part is, these things, I think the price tends to fluctuate a little bit, but I got this for $80. And then it comes with a vinyl band, and I got a more of a cloth one that I find more comfortable for about $10.
Cool.
So, you know, again, that's what, 1/5 the price of an Apple Watch, something like that. So yeah, if you're in the market for a smartwatch, you want something simple and basic, the Amazfit BIP, B-I-P, definitely worth it.
I found that online, comes in different colors. $80 is the discount price, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Hey, I hate to cut the show short, but we got to go. And my only tip of the week for myself, I'm in a building. A tornado went over here 5.5 days ago. I can tell you that audio over IP was a real saving grace here. It allowed us to be very, very flexible. Get audio over IP. I'm in an Axia studio right now myself. It's been terrific. We got to go. Thanks a lot, Aaron Reed. Appreciate you very much. Chris Tobin, thanks for checking in with us and being part of the show as usual. Our producer is Suncast. Thank you very much, Suncast. And also thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network. So we'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.